Welcome to Day Zero Update for February 11th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
And yeah, we're going to be a two-man crew because the Super Bowl has conspired against us.
Yep.
Happening on Sunday yet again. And just could not line up the schedules to get Dan Ribb on here. So
yeah.
He'll enjoy the Super Bowl anyway, so he won't be out too bad here. But yeah, we got a good number of stuff to talk about this week. Not too much in terms of numbers, but we got some big stuff going on with Xbox that seems like it'll get aired out next week.
Yep.
And we'll talk about that. The IGN staff did something pretty cool.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy news, one bad for what people expect about a certain game releasing on a certain console. And then good news, as another one that's coming out in a few weeks has gotten a big showcase. Showed off a bunch of stuff. But yeah, there's that. And then, yeah, we'll talk about some subscription stuff before that. But before we get up to all that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. I've been playing some Foam Stars. Did some of that this week, played a few hours of that, and that's pretty good. I would liken it not to Splatoon, because Splatoon's whole thing is it's a territory control game, very much, and Foam Stars doesn't really have any of that.
Yeah.
I would say it's more of a typical shooter in that sense, and, you know, you get the more of a Overwatch vibes, especially with the variety of characters in here and their different abilities and different gun types and all that, that kind of adds that kind of flavor to it. But I also think there's a bit of Rocket League to this, and that the matches are pretty quick. Maybe spend 5 minutes or so at most in these matches, outside of maybe a couple of match types that I've seen. The basic one that you get to play early on is kind of just your basic kind of a team deathmatch game, though. It's 4v4. Both teams have essentially 7 tickets, and once, you know, 7 of your people get chilled, as they call it here, because this is a game set in a version of Las Vegas called Bath Vegas, where you know, all these people are into raves and the nightlife of Vegas, that kind of stuff. So they call kills chills here.
Yeah.
Essentially, you cover them enough in foam, they kind of turn into a ball form.
Yeah.
You use for your board, your foam board to hit them and, you know, knock them out of the match for a few seconds. Your teammate can hit you with their board, then you get knocked back into the match.
Yeah.
And, so that's pretty good. But yeah, the once you have 7 people get knocked out, it picks the best player of the game and just shows you their health bar of sorts.
Yep.
And you are kind of trying to keep them alive and take out the other team's best player, their star player. And so whoever's star player goes down first, that team wins.
Yeah.
And usually that's pretty quick. And then at the end, it picks 5 stats. I think it's usually all the same stats, but it, you know, shows like who's the best player at these things, and you get a little bit of extra, I think, XP with that. And so along the way, you're kind of leveling up your character, which adds, unlocks some cosmetic stuff for the all the character customization stuff, but also levels up the battle pass that it has, which is your standard kind of battle pass. $6 for the premium version, but it has a decent amount of free stuff on there. So that's kind of weird, but the worst kind of part of it is the shop is full of stuff to pay money for and generally feels pretty expensive for what they're offering. To which I'm like, this feels like a free-to-play game right now, but we know that once it's done being on PlayStation Plus, it's going to be like $30, something like that. And I'm like, that's a bit much for all the monetization that's in here. Obviously, they're trying to make this a modern game where all games get monetization, even if you're paying $70, $10, $40, or get it for free. And so that's kind of the thing that's kind of most rotten here is that the amount of customizations that it seems like you're going to unlock, because you can look through everything that you can unlock with the for each character, and it'll tell you, like, this is in the shop, this is in the battle pass, this you'll unlock with this challenge or whatever. There's a bunch of challenges, like, you know, get this, you know, accommodation for 5 times or something like that.
Yeah.
You'll unlock it or get to this level, that kind of stuff. And so it's like, yeah, this is kind of in that vein where it's like, this should probably just go free to play versus being a $30 game.
Yeah.
Because I imagine once the PS Plus period is over, they're probably not going to see a ton of sales. I don't know, maybe it'll surprise me, but they've got a lot of stuff to customize. They got back bling like Fortnite. It's like a hologram thing instead of like some physical thing like a lot of Fortnite has for their characters. You know, you got skins for your gun, skins for your character, skins for your board. I forget what else there is. There might be some, they could have like a little hologram character that follows you around that can have alternate skins, though. Yeah, they have all the time-limited stuff, and I think even the worst thing on top of all that is the store is incredibly slow to load. It's like it feels like when you would accidentally pull up a store on like a PS3 game, it would just take like several minutes, or like when you play an Ubisoft game and you pull up the Ubisoft Connect thing, you're like, oh god, did something break? And you're like, no, it's just this slow because they didn't invest in speedy loading for this thing. And so yeah, it feels like every time I accidentally or I go to the store, I remind like, oh, this was a bad thing to do because you can't cancel out till it loads in, kind of thing. But the game itself has a decent amount of content. You have that basic mode, and they have, I think, every hour one of their temporary modes loads in as like a special thing you can do, at least once you get to level 2 or 3 for your account. And you can play that stuff, and then if you play a few matches of that, you unlock the ability to play that, I think, full-time or something like that. I think that's what it's doing, but that might not actually be true, but I jumped into the first one I had, like, when there was, like, 10 minutes left, so I got, like, 2 matches in instead of, I think, the 3 that was required, and so I didn't really stick around to see if there was anything better going on with that stuff, so maybe that's different than what I was assuming, but yeah. But they also have single-player modes called missions that are sort of where you get story stuff around these characters and kind of the world that's going on.
Yeah.
Which is that they have these weird characters that have landed on Earth, and your team, the Foam Stars, are the ones that can save the Bath Vegas, at least. I don't know about the Earth, but you play those, and it was weird because they throw you into a tutorial when you start up the game. That's pretty slow as it explains all the mechanics. And then I started up the one for the first character you generally get. The tutorial has you play as. So I played the first mission that she had, Soa. And it went through the tutorial stuff again. Like, just explaining all the controls. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Do you think people are somehow going to get around this? I was like, maybe we should just skip that first tutorial and let people do this. But then they probably realized, if they do that, people are going to complain they don't know how to play, that kind of thing. But I don't know. It was weird. But it was like a wave-based thing. You take out all the enemies in a wave, then it loads up the next one. And along the way, you're kind of getting other characters talking to you and, you know, giving you exposition and that kind of stuff. And then once you're done with the mission, you get a little more exposition as a reward.
Yeah.
Which for Snow was like a little radio thing she was going to do, like a Q&A radio show. And got to talk to a little girl about what she could do with her life when she grows up, that kind of stuff. And so I was like, all right, this is neat. I don't know if it's good enough that I want to keep playing it, but they also do have co-op missions as well. You can do with up to 4 people, maybe. I don't know if that has matchmaking or not, but it's like decent amount of stuff in this. And also has, you know, collections of all the videos and images and all that kind of stuff you unlock as you go, which you'll see like ads for the fake brands they have in the game. Mm-hmm. Kind of do an in-world advertising kind of thing, which is weird, but you can watch that for how silly it is. But yes, Foam Stars is pretty solid. Probably play some more of this. All the matchmaking and all that's pretty quick, though I did have bugs from the playing on day one or day two, I think it was, where I would just crap out on the matchmaking, and then I would have to like quit out of the game or quit back to the main menus and load back in. Mm. So it would be claimed my network was messing up or something, even though it was perfectly fine because I was streaming. So it's like, my network's doing just fine, game. I think you're the one that has the problem. But yeah, that's Foam Stars. It's out on PlayStation Plus for PS5 and PS4, and that's the only versions that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Bold of Square did not put even PC versions out there, but I imagine they may at some point. But yeah, there's Foam Stars. The other live service game I played this week, I got Helldivers 2, mm-hmm. Which is out on PS5 and PC, $40. And it seems like it's doing very well, at least for what the Steam store can tell us from the way they track that stuff. I'm checking right now. I think it's one of the, let's see, it's number 7 most played game right now but it's at 155,000 peak today. It's sitting right now at 142,000. So the devs on Twitter, I think, have suggested that they are over 1 million units sold, so that's pretty cool for them. This game, mm-hmm. That's kind of one of the first Sony live service games to get out there and seems to be doing very well. Mm. If you don't know the original Helldivers, this is a game that's basically a spoof on Starship Troopers, complete with the like patriotic military advertising that starts up, where it's like a dude that's arriving home, see his family, his wife and his kid. And then a giant-ass bug appears out of nowhere and kills them in front of him as he screams about the horrible things that have befallen him and talking about how the Super Earth needs to fight the war against the Terminids, which are the bugs. There's also the Automatons, which are the robots, and then maybe adding more races at some point. But right now, the way the game is all set up, you are... watching this map of it's not the universe, I don't know what they call it, but the big war map that shows all these sections of space, and they have a handful of planets for each of them. Right now, the Automatons taken over a couple of them. Mm. The Terminids have taken over like 4 or 5 sections. We are, as a community, working through that. As you complete missions, you add to, I think it's, 0.0001% of the liberating percentage that they call it. Mm. When I started playing later on Thursday evening, already like 4 or 5 planets had been liberated in the Terminid area. There's still like 2 more left. One was at like 60%, the other one was at 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So good bit of work to go. The Automatons, definitely not the thing people have been focusing on. Those were like at 5 to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's any time limit on that stuff. It's just a matter of opening up more planets to take on. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, as you take on missions, you go into the game. You start off at the easiest difficulty. Then you kind of work your way up as you complete missions on the next difficulty. I have medium opened up right now, and that's pretty tough. A lot of those missions are 2-part missions. So you do one mission, and then you try to do the second one, separate ones. The missions can be like 20 to 40 minutes, but you can just do the main objective and kind of get out.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, you kind of just have enemies spawning all around you. You can look at an overview, overhead map that shows you like big red areas that are like, these are where they're at right now, it's hot spots, but there'll be little bits here and there you'll see, and if you start trying to shoot them, they may start spawning a lot more right there as you're doing stuff. So yeah, there's been a good variety of objectives I've seen. There's been ones where I have to go to these nests and shoot up all the eggs and can destroy a bunch of them there. One that I had to go and turn on this equipment, this like mining equipment or something like that, that got gummed up with bug goo.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go like turn on like radio broadcast towers and some that you have to turn off because there's pirate broadcast going on, all kinds of stuff, or just go to these places and just kill tons of bugs.
Yeah.
Lots of that kind of stuff. And you'll find like abandoned outposts and maybe bug outposts and some of these other kind of little areas of interest. And you're trying to collect, what is it? You're trying to keep up with your ammo, which you can find in some of these places,
mm-hmm.
as well as samples, different types of samples. But on the easier difficulties, you just have access to one that can show up in these areas.
Yeah.
Can help you unlock stuff on the ship. Use the money you get to purchase stratagems, which from the original game are kind of these support items or turrets or whatever that you call down, or you can call down, you know, attacks, you know, orbital lasers and all that kind of stuff as you're unlocking that stuff. But you can only have, I think, 4 personal ones, and they give you some by default, which are like a resupply to drop down ammo and health stuff and that kind of stuff for you to refill. But yeah, along the way, you can do a lot of these missions solo, probably up to a certain point in terms of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
But you may be able to just grind up your way to better weapons and all that kind of stuff to be able to better handle those higher difficulties, or, you know, just be a really good player, not just waste a lot of ammo, just hold it down constantly, that kind of stuff. But definitely seemed like the servers were being overloaded by players, so you had the matchmaking kind of get gummed up a lot. From what the cool thing is, the devs on the, I think, the Reddit for the game have been very open about what the issues have been. It seemed like a lot of it for the matchmaking was like, oh, it's loading so many people into a match that it's giving, you know, 99% of them errors because it's filled up before they even get to it, kind of thing. But they put out updates to try to minimize that kind of stuff. But also, you're supposed to have a thing where if you set up a mission, people then can load into that to be match made. So Friday morning, I was playing some and had somebody, before I even realized it, loaded in, and then had a second person who loaded in too while we were getting ready to go down and start the mission. Though the third person ended up like getting a disconnect error, so they crapped out. But the two people I had were the one person I had helping me, we were able to handle things pretty well. We were playing on easy, I think, so it wasn't supposed to be too tough, though I did die a few times. But this is one of those games, much like the original and the team's previous games, Magicka, are games that are built around co-op play, as well as there being no way to turn off friendly fire. So that, you know, if you drop a turret, they tell you in some of the flavor text, like, when you drop one of these things, make sure you're not in front of it because it doesn't have the ability to tell the difference between enemies and friendlies. That kind of stuff, as well as your teammates' shots as well, can kill you if you're not careful. So it's very much built out like that. So that's why they have prone positions you can do. So you can kind of have two people kind of occupying, you know, similar space, and people can, you know, crouch or go prone, that kind of stuff, if you want to kind of have some good fire coming from one place, that kind of stuff. They also turn that prone into like a dive, so you can just hit the circle button as you're in any direction, and you kind of dive over in that direction, laying on the ground, taking shots. So you kind of get a little bit of John Woo kind of feeling action here, but it's a really fun game. It really feels fun to mow down a bunch of bugs or the robots. The fun thing with the robots is they have an objective where you need to go plant super earth flags. And while it's, you know, you got to essentially hold the spot for a bit. And along the entire time, it's playing patriotic music as the flag slowly rises out of the thing that it's starting in, kind of thing. and has some fun times with people. We're all just saluting it while it's going up, having fun with that kind of patriotic part of it, which is fully built into the game.
Mm-hmm.
As the first emote you have is the salute. But a lot of the flavor text is about patriotism, defending democracy, all this kind of stuff that is very much, you know, of an era that the Starship Troopers kind of grew out of in the the early to mid 90s with, I think that was probably built around like the Iraq War, stuff around that. So yeah, that's a fun time, especially so they have, for kind of unlock stuff for customization, they have two battle passes. Mm-hmm. There's a paid and there's a free tier.
Yeah.
So they give you a bunch of stuff to unlock without paying for the premium battle pass, which is pretty cool. And it's done like Fortnite, where as you complete missions, you get medals that then you spend on whatever you want on a page. And then once you've spent X amount, it opens up the next page so you can start grabbing stuff there.
Mm.
And the battle pass seemed to be like... it was either like $5 or $10, whatever it was, worth of the in-game currency that you can get from the free battle pass. Not enough to get the premium out of it, but I think if you get all of it, you can probably knock about half of that cost off.
Mm.
And if you're paying that much, you're probably make that a worthwhile investment. So yeah, it's a very cool game. And they do have a live shop of like, here's like four things you can buy for the next 2 days. Kind of stuff, which is doesn't seem really worth it, but they have fake user reviews under it, and you'll see some ridiculous, you know, usernames for them. That's pretty cool. I forget what someone's like badass, you know, 99, whatever. And it's like, but C's instead of S's and that kind of stuff. But there's only 5 stars and 1 star reviews, and the 1 stars are automatically removed and reported for treason. So they play around with that kind of stuff. That is pretty good. So yeah, it's a very fun game. They're working through some of the bugs and that, but the devs seem pretty insistent on getting that stuff fixed as quickly as possible. And it seems like the game is really taken off pretty well on Steam. So looking forward to put some more time into that. And yeah, definitely a really cool game.
Okay.
And the last one, I checked out the Skull and Bones open beta that happened this weekend.
And
figured out that this is kind of a bog standard game. It's kind of like if Sea of Thieves was more of an Ubisoft RPG kind of live action thing or live service thing. What the start of the game is kind of teaches you the basics of the boat controls as you're part of this crew on this big ship, and you're just blowing up British ships left and right. And kind of a very hilarious like action movie kind of way, as you just take a shot at them and then like 2 seconds later they just explode.
Big
balls of fire kind of stuff. But then you get to a point where you get your comeuppance. Though for me, I was taking out these ships and just ran out of the area, the playable area. And at that point you don't have your sails working, so I just like slowly trudged back into the playable area, and then some random ship apparently just automatically blows you up. So I was like, oh, this was awkward way to transition from the tutorial to the rest of the game. But basically you're trying to find a ship called the Exeter, and you start off as like a survivor of this explosion of the ship, and you have a couple people that kind of show up with their little dhow that picks you up, and they're like, this is where you make your character. You decide all your visual stuff. There's not much in the way of like a Bethesda style engine of like deforming the face and all that, but it's all like skin color and eye color and hair and all that kind of stuff. So that's a pretty decent one of those. They let you change it at any point, so you're not really burdened with having to stick with it for the rest of time. So that's not too bad. I do have a bunch of shirt customizations and all that kind of stuff. Once you get to like the St. Anne area, which is just a big shop town, Where you can go and buy, you know, a bunch of equipment and all that kind of stuff to outfit your new ship that you'll build after you do some quick fetch quests, which was funny because I started off the game like in the area you're on, you're on your dial, you kind of going around these waters and it's just like, oh, there's just a bunch of materials here to pick up. And I was like, okay, we'll just do that. And that was apparently enough to almost make everything I had early on, outside of like the one or two things that they didn't have available in that area. So, but yeah, you're kind of just going through these very basic fetch quest type stuff. And it's all kind of just boring and boilerplate stuff. But yeah, the first like combat quest I got, it's like, oh, I had to go kill these specific type of ships from this one faction. So they got a bunch of factions around. There's the one called the Sea People, which I just kept thinking of like One Piece's like fishmen kind of thing, but I'm pretty sure they're actual people. But it took me a while to figure out like what, because it didn't like show any markers on the overworld map or anything for places to go to find these things. I did find a base for whatever the company they were calling it, but it was like French company kind of spelling. So I was like, oh, you gotta go kill the French pirates that are out here, the French government sponsored trading ships and all that. But I had to find their gatherer ships, which I looked in the area I was in. I was killing their bigger ships pretty easily, but it took me a while just going around finding the place where this was. It eventually showed up on the map, so that wasn't too bad, but I just kind of farted around for 30 minutes kind of looking around at stuff. And yeah, it's this beta just kind of has a lot of that kind of stuff where it's rough around the edges. It doesn't do a great job explaining things. When it's like telling me like, go kill two of these kind of ships, and I was like, okay, where do I find those? How do I know what to look for? And I eventually just figured it out. But that was like 30 minutes of being like, I have no clue what I'm doing here. I can, you know, get around pretty easily, you know, shoot down ships that I'm finding, but nothing like what you would typically expect. Like, just put a thing on the map, make it easy to find. It seemed like it was either hidden by like fog of war type stuff or whatever. But yeah, once I got to that, I was like, all right, I've seen a decent bit of this game. It seems fine, but it's not something I'm going to spend $70 for this week. I'd rather get one or two other games instead of that. But that'd be like, if that's ever on like PlayStation Plus or Game Pass, I'll check that out. But as for paying for it right now, that's not going to happen. It just has a lot of weird stuff. Your ship has stamina, because you can go into, depending on the type of ship, you might have different modes of speed, but then there's a speed on top of that that it can only do for so long before like the ship potentially like falls apart or whatever. That's kind of the weird thing that they're doing. But also depending on how much crap you picked up. So they kind of encourage you to store stuff in the warehouse. Your top speed, even with that extra sprinting kind of mechanic, may not be as fast as possible, which ended up with me the first time I found out about how much that limits the speed. That was me going out to the unsafe waters and being able to go like 3 knots, 2 knots kind of thing, but just like slowly dragging my ship around to go grab certain thing. Because another thing, the fun thing that happened is I was going to take a quest that had me make something, and I was like, well, I don't have enough money for this. So I sold some stuff and ended up finding out that was one of the materials I needed to make the thing. So I had to go back out and go get some more of the materials, because there wasn't anybody that sold them in this town, at least at the point that I was in the story stuff. But yeah, the story stuff is basically you're one of the former captains of the crew or something like that, and you're, you know, starting back at square one, and you've got to build yourself back up as a fearsome pirate and all that. And so you're essentially doing a lot of fetch quests and such for merchants on this island before you build yourself up to take on bigger fish, I guess. And it definitely, you get to see some of them, because they highlight like trading routes on the map, so you can see like where bigger ships are going to start coming in, that kind of stuff. And yeah, you can kind of go and try and ransack some of these bases and all that kind of, you know, very basic, like, open world mechanic stuff. But, yeah, everything else is like, yeah, this seems fine. It's nothing revolutionary or anything. It just seems like this is what the game that they made when they, you know, had to get it out. So, but it does have a lot of, you see other players, and so you kind of work with them to take down bases or potentially just fire on them and be that kind of person in this game. But for the beta, I didn't see anybody attacking other people. It just seemed like people working together to take down these bases and that kind of stuff. But mostly it kind of felt like an MMO where people were just going out, doing their thing, coming back and getting into the safe waters that are sort of around the base towns you're going to land in. So, and they have like sunken ships and crash ships that you can go and launder for stuff, you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's okay. It was fun to join in for the beta and see like what this game is, but yeah, it was like, yeah, free was a pretty good price for this to check it out. But, I don't expect that game to be blowing up or anything. So, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So, Brandon, what have you been playing?
Well, I'm still playing Persona 3 Reloaded, and getting a sort of a better idea of like how that game kind of it, like, because visually, in a lot of ways, that game, even though it's a remake of Persona 3, gets a lot of its cues from Persona 5. But the way that, you know, like their dungeons work is significantly different. In Persona 5, the various dungeons are sort of spread all around Tokyo in various locations. And, you know, like in the rest of the Persona series, they are, you know, like sort of representations or inspired by real places. Unlike that, however, Persona 3, the dungeons are all located in one section. It's place called the Tower that appears during the Dark Hour out front at in the gates of the high school that the character goes to. And and also, unlike Persona 5, all of the dungeons are randomly generated, which was something they would carry over to Persona 4. However, the actual like boss fights and everything and the areas leading up to boss fights do not take place in the actual dungeon. They are usually in places that are in and around the city that you're currently located in. So like for the first one, for example, the boss fight takes place on a monorail car that is careening headlong into a stationary car, and you're given a time limit to beat the boss, and if you don't beat it before then the car ends up crashing into the stationary car. But that first boss is actually not that difficult. There are like some, I guess you could call, mini bosses that you'll encounter in the within the actual tower themselves. They're called like border guards, because there's a certain point in every dungeon you can't go any further until after you've gone to the area where the boss is and beaten them. But eventually what happens is these are like other enemies that can eventually become, they eventually become like, they just get stronger and progressively stronger. And, you know, eventually some of the, you know, border guards become like regular enemies and other ones replace them, you know, stuff like that. And it's still a lot of fun, still very enjoyable, still, you know, it's definitely a massive improvement on the original. The original looks downright just incredibly crude compared to this. And also it just plays better. Especially the fact that you can like actually control the other members of your party rather than just, you know, having to rely on them doing it for you is kind of a big deal. At least to me. But yeah, so Persona 3 Reloaded, great game. Loving it. We'll be reviewing it as soon as I'm finished. Other game I've been playing is Fear and Hunger Termina. I finished the original Fear and Hunger, so I went and got the sequel. Fear and Hunger Termina is it's definitely something of an improvement over the original. For one thing, the graphics definitely have stepped up a little bit. It's still, you know, 2D, but it definitely looks just a bit better drawn. than the first one was. It takes place someplace. Well, the first Fear and Hunger takes place somewhere analogous to like the late Middle Ages. This one, Fear and Hunger Termina, takes place somewhat analogous to 1941, where you have what's called the Bremen Empire basically expanding into all the parts that are analogous to Europe. And yeah, the Bremenites are shown to be just complete assholes who are in it for expansionism's sake. Unlike who they're supposed to be analogous to, they don't really have an analogy other than growing the empire. But what happens is you end up in this little city that is kind of like supposed to be sort of like, it's supposed to be like kind like, say, like somewhere around like, say, Bosnia or Sarajevo, like right around that time period, with little mixtures of like Paris. And you get to play, you can play one of like 8 different characters. And you're essentially going into an era, into a city that's undergoing what's called the Festival, which is essentially just a large citywide purge where everybody's trying to kill everyone else and come out on top. And the immediate thing that you'll notice right off the bat that's different from the first Fear and Hunger is the fact that this one is definitely more combat based. The original Fear and Hunger really is more of a survival horror game than an RPG, even though it plays and looks like an RPG. In the first Fear and Hunger, actually, like, fighting enemies is more of like a last resort in most cases, at least starting out. Here in Termina, you're actually like encouraged to actually fight. That doesn't necessarily mean it's easy, mind you, but it's not as like a slog as it sometimes is in Fear and Hunger. The other thing is, unlike the first Fear and Hunger, it's a bit more, I guess, reserved in the disturbing side. Like, don't get me wrong, there is definitely some awful, awful shit that happens to you and other people in this game, but it's not quite as blatant and constant as it is in the first Fear and Hunger. It's a bit more subdued. But it's still there and it can still happen. It's just more spread out than it was in the first game. Also a new, addition to combat is that now, because it takes place in 1941, you have access to firearms, and that's everywhere from pistols to like, you know, submachine guns and stuff like that. And it definitely does make combat somewhat easier. But keep in mind that you still have to deal with like ammunition and stuff like that in order to keep using those weapons. So you're going to want to make sure that you've got a regular melee weapon, you know, in your repertoire at all times. But yeah, in general, this game, it's definitely bigger than the first Fear and Hunger was. The first Fear and Hunger, you could theoretically finish it in like 4 to 6 hours. This one is definitely a bit bigger and a bit longer, and also a little bit more intricate. There's a lot more going on here, but it's fun just sort of going through, much like with the first Fear and Hunger, going through trying to find all the little lore bits that you can find and finding the connections between the first game and this one, and just... it's good. I love Fear and Hunger, and I'm really liking Fear and Hunger Termina. So yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, yeah, let's get to some news here. And first up, we've got the subscription news of what games you'll be able to play. This PlayStation Plus lineup for the monthly games is 1 week late because I just plain forgot to grab it last week in the move and all that. So. Apologies for that, but yeah, as I mentioned, Foam Stars is the big highlight game of the month for PS5 and PS4. So a big online, shooter game to play, so that's fun there. But yeah, the other one here, Rollerdrome, is also available for PS5 and PS4. That's just a very fun game, very much a third-person shooter arena combat sports game, essentially, a Scream Sports, as you're sort of a character who's set up to play in the Rollerdrome League show thing. very much a combat sport. Very much playing on a lot of movies and such that have been coming out for the last like 30, 40 years about this kind of idea. But yeah, you're going around grinding on rails, jumping off of ramps, doing tricks, all this kind of stuff while shooting enemies as it kind of slows down while you're in air, that kind of stuff. And yeah, you're trying to work your way up the ranks to eventually become the champion. And it's a very fun game, well worth checking out. If you have
very fun, that. But it can be challenging.
Yeah.
And especially trying to, when it get into later levels where there's like significant gaps and cliffs that you have to avoid, it can be a little difficult to, you know, keep remembering where you're located at and avoiding pitfalls. But yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. Heavily enjoyed it when I played it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's well worth checking out. And the third game is Steel Rising for the PS5. I believe this is a Souls-like action RPG.
Yep, French Revolution Souls-like.
Yeah, alternate history Paris, in which the French Revolution has been suppressed by a robotic army. So you get to deal with all that kind of fun stuff. Almost like a little bit of Lies of P, but instead of being set around the puppet revolution, overtaking all the humans, this is more the robots in a version of Paris. So kind of similar vibes, but yeah, a pretty neat looking game. So there you go for that. And then, yeah, they also mentioned that they got a new Fall Guys DLC pack that gives you skins for Ratchet and Clank and Aloy. So you can have some fun with that stuff in the game. So yeah, there you go. Pretty cool. And yeah, let's see. Oh yeah, they also are having a game trial for PlayStation Plus Premium members for Marvel Spider-Man 2. So if you have not checked that game out, let's see, that started on the 6th. So yeah, you can check it out now. 2-hour trial. Check out the early parts of the game and enjoy. So yeah, some good stuff there. For Game Pass, looks like they also have some good stuff here. Let's see what's available now. This game called Anuchard, AnucharD, console and PC. Yeah. Let's see. I think this is a Zelda-like from what I downloaded on the console and had not played it yet, but I think it's Zelda-like. As I mentioned, go forth, battle monsters, solve puzzles, and restore Anuchard to its former skyward glory. So that might be a neat game. Let's see. Also available now for console and PC, Train Sim World 4. The latest in the Train Sim World games. So you get a bunch of trains to control, different scenarios, all that kind of stuff you're trying to do. You have 3 routes across the UK, Austria, and the US. So some decent variety there. As of the 8th, looks like Madden NFL 24 showed up on the EA playlist. So if you have Game Pass Ultimate or EA Play on any of the platforms it's on, you can check that out with the Super Bowl happening today. So there you go for that. Let's see, as of the 13th, so that'll be Tuesday, for console and PC, Game Pass follows up Resident Evil 2 with Resident Evil 3. So you can check out that version of Resident Evil 3 with Nemesis and all that. Not supposed to be as good as Resident Evil 2. It's kind of shorter and all that, but that was also true of the original game, being kind of a shorter thing. But yeah, there you go. Neat thing there. Let's see, on the 14th, for console and PC, Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. So that'll be returning after taking a break. That is the Castlevania Symphony of the Night style game from the original creator.
Yep.
At least of Symphony of the Night, not Castlevania. That guy went somewhere else, I think.
Yeah.
This is Igarashi's studio working on this. They still have not put out a sequel yet. I assume they're working on it, but it's kind of wild. That game's been out for like 8 years now, something like that. I think it was like 2015, 2016. But yeah, there you go. On the 15th, I think it's Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. A Little to the Left, for console and PC will be available. That is a very cozy puzzle game of sorts where you're playing you're solving puzzles of like arranging real life things of sorts, like stacking documents, sorting postcards, arranging, you know, your junk drawer, that kind of stuff. And occasionally you'll have a cat that comes out and just fucks with you. And so sometimes you gotta watch out for that. So that's a really cool game, really cool kind of puzzle game. Especially for a number of them, they have like alternate solutions. I know one that's like, here's like little jars of, you know, some spice or something like that, but it has like three colors in it. And so you can arrange them in one pattern or multiple patterns, that kind of stuff, and get multiple solutions. So, but that's one of those kind of cool puzzle games. See, we got two more. Also February 15th for console and PC, Plate Up. This is, I think a cooking restaurant tycoon kind of game. You're managing your restaurants, but also doing some Overcooked style cooking stuff in there. Managing that up, you can play solo or with up to four players total. But you're also able to expand and decorate your restaurant with all that kind of stuff. So, and it has a bit of roguelite elements to it. So it looks pretty neat. And then February 20th, Return to Grace, console and PC. Let's see. Okay, first-person narrative adventure set in a 60s retro sci-fi world. Story here, a daring space archaeologist has just unearthed the ancient resting place of a long-lost AI god known as Grace. So there you go, that's a classic trope there of people unearthing some long-lost god or whatever piece of tech that's going to ruin everything. Let's see, adventure with various fractured AI personalities. You can cover the great mystery of why she was shut down all those years ago. So that sounds neat. And that'll be the Tuesday after next. So there you go for that. And that's it for the games. I'm seeing if there's anything else of note here. Nothing really, as far as I can see. So there you go. Some nice stuff to play there as well on Xbox. But let's get to the rest of the news here. The big update for Spider-Man 2 we talked about a little bit ago got delayed past the end of 2023, and they said it would be coming out early 2024, and we finally have a date for that, March 7th, which will include New Game Plus, as well as a bunch of accessibility options and such. So that's pretty good to see. That'll finally be out in a few weeks here, so.
Yeah,
they haven't released the full patch notes of everything, but I assume they'll have a PlayStation blog post with all those details. So we'll probably maybe follow up on this if there's more stuff there. But yeah, that'll be pretty cool.
Yep.
So yeah, more reason to come back to that game. And then next up here, this is a Game Pass game in the that's been announced to coming to Xbox and Switch and PC, Botany Manor. We've been wondering when a date's going to happen for this, and it seems like it's finally going to hit April 9th. And this is a pretty cool game. It's basically a big puzzle adventure game where you are visiting Botany Manor, the home to a retired botanist who has amassed a huge collection of rare and wild plants that require some research as you're trying to bring them back to life or whatever. And you're sort of using the environments and clues around to figure out these puzzles and solve things. I remember playing the demo for this for the one of the Steam Next Fest in the past. They had you finding ways to get the right lighting to bring a plant, you know, get it to bloom, that kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun little environmental puzzles and such. So
yeah,
it looks like that's going to be really, really neat. So that'll be a nice game for April.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, Game Pass is probably, is definitely like the best place for these types of games.
Yeah.
Just, you know, these really chill sort of comfort games.
Yeah. And speaking of Game Pass, Final Fantasy 14 is coming to Xbox pretty soon. It seems like they have a, they're doing an open beta test that is happening here pretty soon. Let's see, February 21st, which basically what I've seen people that have played Final Fantasy 14 before on PC and PlayStation, basically like, don't jump into that if you want to play the game for yourself, because the way that their weird archaic back end for their account system treats that as like actually playing the game, so you can't check out the free trial for that game, which is just wild. That there's like a whole system that's been existing since Final Fantasy XI, which is, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And they still haven't like overhauled this to make it simple and easy to understand. Instead, you have to, you know, rebuy the game for each platform you want to play it on, have a unique subscription for each platform, all that kind of stuff, buy all the expansions for each platform. This free trial is one of the coolest parts of it, but, you know, if you have a lapsed subscription, you can't play it, even if it includes content that you don't have on your version of the game that you purchased. That kind of stuff. So you have to subscribe or either wait for their little free weeks that they do, or they let people get back on to play some more. But yeah, for this Xbox version, it's been, they've been waiting on it for a while, Xbox people, because Square has had issues with the way, you know, Xbox Live requires things of, you know, from the publishers to be a gold member to play, you know, an MMO, even if it requires a subscription on top of that kind of stuff. And when they announced that it was finally coming to Xbox, people were like, oh, great, they must not be requiring anything, especially when gold was essentially being taken down, turned into Game Pass Core. But as we've seen with all these announcements, there's a little asterisk that says, hey, let's see, it reveals that while the free trial version of the game will not require a Game Pass subscription, the full Xbox Series X and S version will require an Xbox Game Pass Core or Ultimate plan to play. So you'll need that fee, which is either like $10 for the base Core system or Ultimate on top of the $13 monthly fee for the game, which is like a lot of money. There is, you're saying, you know, potentially playing $23 a month just to play Final Fantasy 14 online. Or if you're getting Ultimate, that's makes it an even 30. And it's like, that's a thing that's angered a lot of people, having a thought that this was one of the core things that Square Enix was kind of trying to get a deal to get away from that, but it seems like it's not. So feels like this is kind of a thing that undermines the appeal of that game for Xbox people to jump into. And yeah, great job of Microsoft kind of finally getting a big game and then having to require this on top of that. So there you go. Fun times. As Final Fantasy fans on Xbox, we're about to get a win and Microsoft snatched that from them. But yeah, speaking of Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is coming out here in a couple of weeks. They had a big state of play showing off a bunch of stuff. And from a lot of the comments I saw, people complaining about how spoiler this is. And as somebody who's only beaten really the first disc of the original game, and I'm currently playing through Remake, I didn't notice anything. It's like, oh, this ruins everything. It's just like a bunch of flashes of different environments and all that. It's like, I don't get the context for anything here, but the showcase had a lot to it. They basically went into details on a lot of the side stuff that the game has. It has a lot of side missions, much like the remake, but those kind of divided those up into, here's a chapter where you just go around and help people kind of thing. And Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is more of a big open world game. So they're talking about that as a lot of the things here. The big open world map connected seamlessly. Several areas seamlessly joined together. You have chocobos you can use to get around to buggies and wheelies. And you can also control any of the companions, not just Cloud, which Remake has that a little bit, where you get to control Aerith for a bit, or the fun bits with Barrett, who just shoots everything up, including like those little breakable boxes that can get you more potions or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was fun, just walking around this tunnel, just shooting all these boxes that are up on the wall, and he just knows to automatically aim up there. But it's like, this is a real dumb thing, but it's pretty good for what it is. But yeah, they'll have, I think Red 13 is able to run up walls, and Tifa, I think, has a grappling hook and all that kind of stuff. So they have different ways they can get around, and they have plenty of points of interest. You have little towns that you can go into and do stuff. You have a bunch of odd jobs you can do. They introduce sanctuaries, which reveal knowledge of the game's summons. Sort of the new place where you can get summons, I guess. Where you have to conquer them with your team to be able to have them as a summon that you can pull in. Let's see. Yeah, they got a bunch of mini games. There's a revealing of like a rhythm game of sorts that kind of looks like Last of Us Part Two's guitar mini game, as they kind of show the wheel of the different notes and chords that you can play on that, which is pretty wild to see, because it's like, you did that in the first game, and it kind of sucked because it kind of had you watching these notes show up and then a little circle around them, but it was constantly swimming around the camera and all that, so they kind of just came out of nowhere as you're trying to keep up with that stuff. But yeah, they're talking about all sorts of different mini games here, like the rhythm games. You've been going to the Golden Saucer, so there's a bunch of stuff there as well. As well as having a big card game here. So in grand Final Fantasy tradition since, I think, 7 or 8. I forget which one had the card game. The first one had a card game. 8 definitely did. I forget if 7 had something of a sorts. But yeah, they're definitely got a big bunch of stuff there. They also talked about how there's like relationship stuff here as far as kind of in a Mass Effect way of you talking to people and saying the right things to them. Their opinion of you gets better. And then on certain side quests and story beats, they'll join you. They'll be like insisting on joining you and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they talked about, you know, potentially going on dates at the Golden Saucer. And it's not just the ladies that Cloud can go on dates with at the Golden Saucer.
No, I mean, they already kind of implied that with Remake, but yeah, it's just all out in the open now, I guess.
And I was like, oh, you can hang out with Barrett.
Yeah.
And do fun stuff there, or that kind of stuff. I think the other thing they revealed is that like Vincent isn't a playable character here.
Yeah.
He's just a story character of sorts. He'll hang around and help you out, but he's not going to be like a part of the team. Which isn't a big deal. I assume he'll probably be a big part in the third game, I assume.
Either that, or they're going to do like what they did with Yuffie and have like a DLC to tack on later.
Maybe. As like his gameplay introduction.
Yeah.
Because there's already a ton of people here, and it's like, I don't know how many people you need.
Yeah.
Even though it does have a, you know, there's the tradition of the big cast with Tifa, Barrett, Cloud, Aeris, and Kate Sith, and Red 13, and Vince, and Cid. I think Cid's also not going to be a playable character.
Yeah.
This time. But they'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because people are expecting the big moment to happen in this game, where maybe you don't deal with the character anymore. And it's like, which one's that going to be? And we'll see if they go for the traditional moments, or if they flip it on its side like everybody's expecting. And yeah, they also showed a bit with Zach. Like it's in the demo. They announced the demo's out now, which features the big flashback thing where you're with Sephiroth, Cloud, Sephiroth, and Zach kind of going into a town. I think it's Zach's hometown and doing some stuff. So in this demo, I guess you can play this section of the game and transfer the save over, and you don't have to play it again, which is interesting because they just keep track of like, oh, he's already done this flashback, so you can just skip it and you play all the stuff before and after it. But they also, I don't know if they mention it here. I got it from the press release that they're going to update that demo on the 21st, I think. I'm going to look it up just to see what it's described here. Yeah, second playable section of the upcoming RPG will be available on February 21st, giving players the chance to experience a part of the expansive game world ahead of its February 29th launch. I'm trying to see if there's more. Yeah, they call this The Fall of a Hero in Nibelheim, which is the extended flashback section as Cloud Strife recalls an earlier mission in his career as a soldier, the Nibelheim incident. And then that's the town that you can visit in Rebirth itself years later. Yeah, 21st opening another playable section called Dawn of a New Era in Junon, which is another town they mentioned in the state of play. In a special preview made specifically for the demo, explore a small piece of the massive in-game world around the harbor town of Junon. They've altered this town to make the content more compact so progress cannot be carried over to the full game. But yeah, fans and newcomers will get a chance to experience new forms of exploration, new synergy attacks, and powerful character bonds expressed through thrilling combat. So, yeah, if you get save data out of this demo, you receive a Kupo charm and a survival set in the full game. And yeah, these players will also be able to skip past sections covered in Fall of a Hero and Nibelheim demo. But yeah, that's the whole thing. A lot of stuff there. A lot of good information has people really excited, and I think people have been posting previews. I got to go play the game for a bit, and pretty much all glowing previews from what I've seen. So we're expecting this to be, you know, a big upgrade to Remake.
Yeah.
And that's no slouch of a game there either. So yeah, there you go. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth looking like it's going to be a very good game.
Oh yeah. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. I didn't realize that's coming out on a Thursday.
Yeah.
That's when they're like, no, we'll give people a chance to play it before the weekend. But yeah, there you go. Good stuff there. Next up here, a big partnership has been announced between Disney and Epic Games. It's $1.5 billion investment to acquire an equity stake in Epic Games for the Walt Disney Company. That's a multi-year project aims to create an all-new universe that spans various Disney properties, including Marvel, Star Wars, Pixar, Avatar, and more. Disney says players will be able to create their own stories and experiences, share content, express their fandom and experiences powered by the Unreal Engine. Which, I don't know about that part, the creating and sharing content, but that might just be that the way that people can make their own game modes and such in Fortnite, that's more of a thing you can do with all the Marvel stuff. But yeah, this is not a new thing. The Lego stuff, they took an investment from the Lego company, and that resulted in Lego Fortnite, as well as the some of that kind of stuff has been more fruitful. So Disney's kind of getting in because they want to get an actual metaverse thing going on, and they've failed to do one of their own. So they enlisted the biggest company doing that right now, Epic Games, with Fortnite. So that seems like a whole big thing there. So probably won't see anything out of that for a couple more years. So we'll see how this goes. But yeah, there's a lot of big companies investing in Epic over the past few years with Tencent, Sony, and more people investing into them with that kind of stuff. And yeah, they seem to keep making more and more money. I think I forget who it was that put out these numbers, but suggesting that Fortnite was the most played game of last year on Xbox and PlayStation, which is not a huge surprise. So yeah, there you go. We'll get to some more industry news here. The Kadokawa Corporation has announced that they have acquired Acquire. This is the same company that owns From Software and Spike Chunsoft. If you don't know Acquire, they are a longtime developer that has made a bunch of games. They were the ones that originally created Tenchu and Way of the Samurai series. Which I think Kadokawa Group, I forget if they own those IP or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, there's a smaller developer, but one that has made a lot of interesting stuff. Tenchu, I think, was the game. What was the FromSoft game that they made that was similar to that? The action game they made.
Well, was it Sekiro?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sekiro.
The game that people were talking about, like, oh, they're bringing Tenchu back and having it from software make it kind of thing. And it's like, oh, maybe, I don't know. But definitely seemed influenced by it with plenty of From Software's own general mechanics being inserted into that. But yeah, it's another pretty quality developer under the Kadokawa group there. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I guess they're also the ones that made Octopath Traveler. I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's get to some good news here. The IGN staff announced that they were forming the IGN Creators Guild, which is their new union. Let's see. Unionizing with the News Guild, CWA. And put a petition site to go to sign up and support them. Definitely recommend that if you are a supporter of that. Yeah, IGN's the biggest game site out there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a big deal for them doing this.
Yeah.
As they're trying to get a more formalized contract with terms that helps them get better pay and bonuses and all that stuff that can be real iffy in the games media business. Especially for one that's, I think IGN's owned by Ziff Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So their company has famously not tried to fuck over any games media ever before. So they're going to have their work cut out for them.
Yeah.
With that. So I think the vast majority of people voted for this. And yeah, they are expecting Ziff Davis to voluntarily recognize the guild because over 87% of eligible members have signed union cards. So. We'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully it goes well. It shows more of a sign that this should be the way things go, especially as media in general has been just incredibly turbulent as the shocking that the venture capitalists and huge corporations that own most of them decided to try and cut costs.
Yeah. I mean, there's really nothing else to add to it.
Yeah.
The momentum is still on the side of labor right now, and it's only going to keep growing from there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. Hopefully that works out in their favor. And speaking of stuff working out in people's favor, well, in the opposite direction, Xbox has been the subject of virulent rumors over the past few weeks of suggesting that a number of games are going to be coming to PlayStation and Nintendo.
Yeah.
I think started with rumors of Hi-Fi Rush and then Sea of Thieves also showing up in those and all the way up to Starfield and potentially the Indiana Jones game that just got announced and maybe, what was it, the Blade game? People are like piecing things together and it's like, they never really put like Xbox logos on that game. As like it's coming to Xbox and people are like, oh, maybe that's also not going to be exclusive to Xbox and all this. And then you get the stupid Xbox fanboy community on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
Losing their minds
and
sending constant tweets at Phil Spencer on there, telling him he's ruined everything that almost in the vein of the end of the third Star Wars movie where Obi-Wan and Anakin are fighting and Obi-Wan's yelling at him, you were the chosen one. You're supposed to help the Jedi, not destroy them. That's the vibe that they've been giving off in a way. It's like, all right, people, calm down. This is what happens when you make your identity based around a brand, especially one by one of the biggest companies in the world. So yeah, that's been a thing that people have been freaking out about.
Yeah.
Trying to see if there's any notable things here. Seems a bunch of reasonable thing. Oh, here it is. Phil, this is the Red Ring of Death for Xbox, so great.
Yeah.
They're Microsoft. They'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Phil Spencer put out a statement on Twitter. It's like, while this was going on the weekend, people were like looking at his gamer tag, and it's like, oh, he's just chilling playing Diablo 4. bring up fun ideas of him, like, being in a party with other people, and somebody showed him, like, hey, Phil, people found out about this plan we're doing, and they're freaking out about it. And he's like, ah, shit. So he put out a statement on Monday this past week saying, we're listening and we hear you. We've been planning a business update event for next week where we look forward to sharing more details with you about our vision for the future of Xbox. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think they've given a specific date for this business updates event, whatever. Yeah, that's the last tweet he's posted. So who knows what else is going on with that. But yeah, kind of wild to see. Kind of unsurprising because Phil Spencer for the past few years has been talking about being open to, you know, doing business with Sony and Nintendo on games. They've done some small stuff on that front for the most part, you know, getting a couple of indie games onto the Switch and allowing stuff like the Quake and Doom remasters to come out on PlayStation and Switch, that kind of stuff. But none of their bigger games.
Yeah.
Not even their smaller games. Kind of just stuff that was already on PlayStation or Switch, or like small stuff that they don't find to be threatening to their exclusives business. But it seems like that has changed somewhat recently. Whether it's, I've seen people suggesting that this is like some, this might have been leaked by people that are pushing for them to stay exclusive, and showing like how the community reacts to this, or by parts of the Microsoft or Xbox business, like, you know, we're doing all this. We spent, you know, $70 billion on Activision Blizzard. We should just go all in on putting more games on the other platforms. And kind of, I don't know what that does to the value of the Xbox, but it's not really been great value because people haven't, like, substantially shown up to buy an Xbox Series X or S over a PlayStation or anything this generation. That's just been the business side of it, the lead that PlayStation has generally had for the last decade since the PS4 and Xbox One launched, that has not, like, shrunk or anything.
Yeah.
For whatever, even trying to get a cheaper box out there with a Series S that hasn't, like, tipped things in their favor. And as Phil has said, like, Starfield likely isn't to, like, change the course of the console wars or anything. And yep, definitely didn't do it. They're not in a place where, like, one game changes anything. Like, maybe if they made all this stuff exclusive, that might help, but that's would be pretty shitty of them to spend all this money on these multi-platform properties and franchises and say, like, well, we're not letting new people have any more of them unless you get an Xbox. And it was at least been consistent saying that wasn't the plan. So we'll have to see what this whole thing is. As we've had plenty of people waxing philosophically about Xbox is getting out of the hardware business, because if they're not doing exclusives, then what's the point of any of this? And it's like, well, what if their plan is like what Sony's been doing with PC and like releasing those games on other platforms a year or two later? Like having their technical exclusivity, but then also letting other people have it once they've kind of extracted all the sales that they can. And so, yeah, it just kind of leads to this weird place that they're in. We'll have to see when this event happens and sort of what the announcements are. But yeah, where do you see this going, Brandon?
I am, to be kind of honest, I kind of saw this coming. Because the thing is, with a lot of these games, you know, I'm going to be completely honest. I think the era of the exclusive has more or less started to fade over time. Because at this point, considering how the whole industry has become increasingly more and more monopolized and consolidated around like three or four key companies, they're at a point now where they could very comfortably just trade franchises if they wanted to and not take a financial hit. So, yeah, this was sort of something I kind of saw coming.
Yeah, it's the one thing that the typical infinite growth capitalism is kind of wreaking havoc on, which is like they want to keep making more money on these games while then clearly not coming from just keeping them on Xbox. Then that necessitates that they have to bring them to other platforms. That is where they want to get more money, and it's like potentially getting, you know, $70 from people on PlayStation or Switch, or, you know, $30 or whatever they're going to charge for these games. And that's going to be more money than they were getting before. And that's what they kind of would like you to do, I guess. So yeah, kind of creates this weird situation where their huge corporation goals of making more money kind of leads them to this inevitability if that's what their ultimate goal is. Especially as they've kind of seen the limits of what Game Pass can kind of growth it can get, as you know, it's growing, but not like more than a percentage or two, which is not enough for what they were hoping for, you know, in the past few years. They've seen that there's kind of a plateau with this, especially if it's only available on, you know, the Xboxes and a limited version of it on PC. And it's like, that's the whole thing. I think what Sony's president, Yoshida, was basically saying that they found that like 75 to 80% of people that subscribe are playing just one game at a time. And so, you know, them getting, you know, 6 or 10 games every 2 weeks is like almost overkill for what the average person is actually playing. And which makes a lot of sense, you know. Of course, you get people like, oh, I'm playing, you know, 5 games off of Game Pass. It's like, yeah, you're the minority of people. Most of them find like the one thing they want to play and then stick with that.
Yeah.
And that just, that's happening with PlayStation Plus, with Xbox, probably the Switch Online stuff as well, that they're not exactly having like the whole library become a huge factor for them so much as just like, I'll see if there's something that tickles my fancy, and then if I get done with that, I'll maybe look at something else. It's not like, oh, I gotta play all these games now and just drowning in that like normal gamers are doing. So yeah, we're in a weird place, but yeah, I think that's kind of the limits of what we could talk about, because there's just not much else going on until we see like what the actual details for that stuff is, which we'll have sometime in the next few days, so we'll talk about that next week. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for the show this week. Thank you, Brandon, for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and the future of the Xbox business, because obviously they're going to tell you all your Xbox consoles are blowing up. They're deleting all your games, and Phil Spencer will commit seppuku right on stream.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what's going to happen there. So, yeah. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know and select strangers, we're hopefully not sending in dumbass tweets to Phil Spencer, just posting them online, like with the Tim Dog thing, who's like talking about being betrayed and all that. And it's like, just be normal. They're corporations. They care about as much for you as they do anybody else. So, which is not at all. They just care about your money. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. I will see y'all next time. Have a good one.